Last week on the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers.
In my 22 years as homicide detective, I've learned not to believe in coincidence, and that beanie hat was covered in Great Dane dog hair, but I believed it was planted in an attempt to frame Joe.
I don't think Joe had anything to do with this from the moment he was named a suspect.
I went to my parents for money a lot, but most of the time I lied to them about why I needed it. But that money was really for Dedrick. I didn't want my parents to know he had a problem spending money on fishing and resent him.
Dedrick was out of his element. The only thing that allowed him to fit in here was his wife's money. And boy, did he want to fit in. That's why he was shoved up Greg Jones's butt all the time. Greg and Marcy were rolling in the big bucks.
Did Remy kill her husband because she was tired of him asking for money? I felt I had a strong enough motive to bring Remy back in for questioning.
I may be a Peanuts fan, but I'll shout it from the rooftops until my dying day. I did not kill my husband.
And now, episode 3 of the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers. Karen Primrose, the neighbor of Remy Davis and her dead husband, Dedrick, created a Facebook account in 2009 when her youngest child left home for college and she was looking for a new hobby to bide her time. She found the social networking app especially useful. Karen discovered a chicken crescent rolls recipe on Facebook that has since been a hit at her Super Bowl parties, and she loved that she could now keep up with old acquaintances, their surgeries, divorces, what they ate for lunch. But Karen also learned the app to be useful in other ways, in important ways. It was a highly effective tool at digging up dirt. She prided herself on the dog napping case she saw via Facebook in 2012 when she saw a picture of a missing Lake Ripley Shih Tzu for sale on a dog trading page. She blew that case wide open, and because of her intense investigative efforts, 14 stolen pets were returned to their rightful homes. Karen was awarded a key to the city by the Lake Ripley mayor, which hangs on her living room wall in a glass shadow box. So naturally, when Karen's neighbor Dedrick Davis was murdered only steps away from her home on the quiet cul-de-sac, she was ready to contribute, ready to fire up the old Dell and see what secrets she could uncover to aid the Lake Ripley Police Department and 22-year veteran in homicide, Lieutenant Columbus. This is how it was discovered that Remy Davis was a Peanuts fan. Karen Primrose found herself in the dark internet underworld and uncovered a photo of Remy dressed as Snoopy one Halloween in high school. This was important because Remy originally claimed she saw the killer running away from the home on the night of the murder in a Snoopy beanie hat, a hat that was later found on the storm drain right outside of the Davis's home by neighbor Marcy Jones. And so, Lieutenant Columbus believed Karen Primrose could be an asset to the investigation. He instructed her to keep clicking, keep downloading, keep fishing for answers.
With 22 years experience in homicide, I've learned I can't do it all on my own. I never turned down help. I knew I needed Karen.
While a distraught Remy continued to claim her innocence in her husband Dedrick's murder, Karen got busy trying to prove otherwise.
I searched high and low for more information on Remy, and nothing, I mean nothing, stood out to me. Well, aside from that Halloween photo I found and some fashion faux pas she made in 2013. And so, I switched gears. I fixed myself a pot of coffee and bought a case of Red Bull and started scouring the internet for more information on Dedrick. You know, his background, his past. I knew he grew up a poor boy in St. Louis, but that wasn't enough. I needed more, and I didn't want to let Lieutenant Columbus or my community down.
Karen, with enough caffeine rushing through her veins to kill a Black Angus bull, could not believe what she found. According to the article from the St. Louis Examiner in 2006, a 12-year-old Dedrick was the key witness to a horrible tragedy that would send a troubled 14-year-old girl to a juvenile facility for 7 years.
I found dozens of articles that said Dedrick saw a young girl running from a blazing house fire as he rode his bike around his neighborhood one night. And inside, the girl's parents. She had set the fire and burned them alive. Can you even imagine? And she would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for that meddling kid, one Dedrick Davis.
The news article stated Dedrick identified the young girl as Tanya Kingsford. When news spread of the fire and the deceased Mr. and Mrs. Kingsford inside the home, Dedrick went to the police with information he had about that evening. Karen presented this shocking info to Lieutenant Columbus, and he immediately made the 2-hour trip to St. Louis to meet with Dedrick's only sibling, his older brother, Deadman.
Man, that was a horrible night. My brother Dedrick, he saw that Fruit Loop Tanya Kingsford running from the house fire. She had a box of matches and lighter fluid in her hands. He was sure it was her, because Tanya's dad had hired him to mow their grass a couple times. He was trying to make some extra money, I don't know, for some crickets, some cheap plastic lures, I don't know. Something down at the local bait shop. I was proud of my brother, though, for telling what he saw, because he was the reason that that crazy girl went to juvie for 7 years. Where she belonged? I mean, like, seriously, she sent her parents up in a, blaze of glory, because they would not let her go to a Bon Jovi concert. That's evil, man. That Tanya, she was pure evil.
Deadman said Dedrick was called to testify against Tanya Kingsford, and as the young boy pointed a shaking finger at the 14-year-old girl sitting across the deposition table from him, naming her as the arsonist and murderer of her parents, Tanya was reported to have said, "You're dead, Dedrick. You're dead."
For months after the incident, Dedrick, he had nightmares. He couldn't eat. He couldn't sleep. He even turned down fishing with a grandfather. Man, that homeboy was messed up.
And so, Tanya Kingsford was sent to juvenile detention because of Dedrick's statement. Was this the motive that sent Dedrick to an early grave? Well, Karen Primrose and Lieutenant Columbus certainly believe so. Where was Tanya Kingsford now? And did she hold the Ginzu knife that was thrust into Dedrick Davis's back on a crisp, cool October evening? Find out in 30 seconds. And now, the conclusion of Episode 3 of the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers. Before Lieutenant Columbus had arrived back in Lake Ripley after his interview with dead Dedrick's brother Deadman, Karen Primrose was already hard at work on her trusty Dell with a Garfield bobblehead on top of the monitor. She'd run the name Tanya Kingsford through every search engine, including Ask Jeeves. She even paid for internet background checks with her own money, much to her husband Bob's dismay. However, the time and money spent on her investigative efforts seemed to have been wasted. Karen did not learn much about Tanya that wasn't already public knowledge.
I discovered Tanya Kingsford went through extensive therapy at juvie and was let out on good behavior after 7 little old years. She only did 7 years after that heinous crime she committed, but once she was released and out of the system, she seemed to have just disappeared. What I really needed was a photo of Tanya, and I couldn't find one anywhere. I guess they were trying to protect her because she was a minor murderer. But still, I knew if I could just get a picture of Tanya, I could upload it to this face detection software that I bought from a guy in the alley behind the old Radio Shack building, and it would give me matches of anyone who looked remotely similar on Facebook. I needed that photo.
Karen shared her need with Lieutenant Columbus, and he conducted a search of the Davis home yet again. Even allowed Karen in the home to scour through photo albums and storage totes for one of Dedrick's old yearbooks. Remy told them they were wasting their time, that they wouldn't find anything from Dedrick's past in the house. Said he left everything back in St. Louis to make more room in the closets for fishing paraphernalia. At a seemingly dead end, Karen did what any experienced investigator would do. With Lieutenant Columbus's permission, she called on Dedmon Davis, Dedrick's brother, and asked for help.
This Karen lady, she says she needed to find a picture of Tanya. I told her I wish I could draw, because I could have painted a perfect picture, but I can't draw. I'll never get that crazy kid's image out of my head. Black, beady eyes, sunken cheekbones, dark, ratty hair, and skin as pale as an albino snowman. But I can't draw all that. Like I said, I can't draw. So I did what that Karen lady asked me to do. I drug around my parents' house, and I did find one of Dedrick's middle school yearbooks. When I flipped through the pages, I found Tanya's picture, and I ain't gonna lie, I screamed like a little girl. I threw the book down. I immediately went and found some sage, and I lit it up.
Once Dedmon regained his composure, he overnighted the yearbook to the Lake Ripley Police Department in care of amateur investigator Karen Primrose. She was already waiting at the station when the postman delivered the manila envelope.
Karen called me from the station while I was having a barbecue sandwich at my favorite restaurant, the Notorious P.I.G. She was talking a mile a minute. I couldn't understand a word she said, but I knew she'd cracked the case wide open. I didn't even finish my lunch. I immediately headed back to work.
What did Karen Primrose discover when she opened the middle school yearbook from 2005?
I nearly died. Right there in the police station, I fell onto this poor, unsuspecting officer's desk and had him dial Lieutenant Columbus for me. I didn't even need to use that face recognition app. I knew who Tanya was the moment I saw her face.
When Lieutenant Columbus viewed the yearbook photo of Tanya, he wasted no time. He knew right where he could find Tanya Kingsford. He'd seen her that very morning. They had discussed Dedrick's murder, even.
The last thing Tanya said to me that morning was, "Let me know if I can do anything to help."
And oh, was he about to take her up on her offer. Tune in next Sunday when we find out who killed Dedrick Davis on episode 4 and the conclusion of the Fake Crime Mockcast, Fishing for Answers.